Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Another NBA All-Star weekend has come and it's gone. Final score, one of the teams, a whole hell of a lot. The other team, not quite as much. And of course, people are going to come in and try to complain about the lack of defense. In other words, one of the lamest arguments of all time. Yeah, right, because that's exactly what I want to see. When the best players in the world assemble. Yeah, that's what I want. I want some quality trapping and excellent help side defense. That's what I'm here for. I mean, I can get really hyped about the best players in the world dunking, or I could get really hyped about them closing out on a three-point shooter in a controlled and fundamental way. You know, forget that moment where Dirk drained one three after another from halfway back to Dallas. Did somebody do a good job of positioning himself between both his man and the ball? And forget the best dunks. Forget about that. Who did the best job of showing and then recovering? Listen to me. Man, that was cool. That was a blast. That was fun. That was entertaining. In fact, that was a borderline perfect NBA All-Star game. Because the NBA All-Star game is not a basketball game. That's what made that so great. The NBA All-Star game is not a basketball game. What it is a compilation of highlights and moments, great moments. And for that, it was awesome. And if you can't get with that, if you don't like that, that's not on them, that's on you. Because the All-Star game is all about the highlights. And it was jammed with highlights, great highlights. Now, the All-Star weekend overall, pretty meh. I mean, really, nobody remembers anything about that weekend already, right? Nobody remembers the celebrity game. The three-point shootout had one amazing first round before Joe Harris ripped it. The dunk contest had John Collins wearing a scarf and a hat trying to jump over an airplane. Except he didn't jump over the plane. He took a big chunk out of that plane. Like, I'm not going to say the contest jumped the shark when he couldn't jump that plane, but they probably should have canceled the dunk contest after Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine got after it 3 years back. Unless you're going to run those two guys back, anything else is going to be boring. And it was. It is. It was. I mean, trust me, 3 years from now, you are not going to be able to remember a single thing from the All-Star weekend. Hell, 3 hours from now, you're not going to be able to remember a single thing from the All-Star weekend other than the game itself, which, again, was pretty awesome. Let me break that down for you quickly. You had Anthony Hamilton dominating the national anthem. Seriously, I'm not even going to mention what happened a year ago because that disaster should not be mentioned in the same breath as what Hamilton did yesterday. If you were looking for someone to make sure that it was not going to be a joke all over again, then Hamilton was your guy. Then you had the game itself. You had that great moment of Dirk and D. Wade coming into the game together, and then Dirk knocking down a three.
35 seconds to go in the quarter. Nowitzki, yes!
So cool, right? And then Dirk knocking down another three.
Yeah, and others for showing his hand.
Nowitzki for the
lead! And then Dirk with yet another. Those shots scraped the ceiling, but they barely touched the net. My guy was drawing rain every single time he let it fly. That was amazing. And that's exactly why he was there. What a moment. A great moment. And speaking of moments, how about that one where Steph Curry went to Giannis alley-oop?
Here's Curry with a high bounce pass. Giannis slapping
it home. That ball went so high, it was off the screen altogether, and the freak had to wait for it. That's a 6'11" dude getting up, waiting for it, and then throwing it down. You see, that's what the All-Star game is all about. It's not about 48 minutes of awesome action. It's about moments. And that game had moments by the truckload. Because there was one more Wade to LeBron moment.
Durant for Wade. Walker back. Here's Wade setting up. The backboard for LeBron!
The question coming in was, would they figure out a way to replicate that iconic photo from back in their Miami days, and they came pretty damn close. Of course, the original was not an alley-oop, but who cares? Who cares? And then there was Curry kicking his leg out at Klay Thompson to draw a four-point play. And Curry yapping at Klay the entire game, which prompted Klay to say afterwards, quote, "I've seen him do that so many times in his career, and it sucked to be on the receiving end. And then to rub it in my face. He was taunting me. This guy's a terrible sport. He should have gotten a T, but that's life," end quote. Well, and then he jokingly called Curry a flopper. Quote, "He sold it. He flopped a little bit, but he's good at that. He's got a lot of gamesmanship," end quote. And then my guy Dame. How about my man Dame hitting not one, but two threes from the logo?
Guard the three.
From way down.
It's Miller time. Now they're talking. We've got a ball game here, people. Lillard again.
Seriously, Dame from the middle of the logo.
It's two for me.
Inside the middle of the logo. And then you even had Steph closing out the game by chasing that bounce alley-oop to the freak with one to himself.
LeBron will make it two straight victory. Oh, Curry. Oh, he has with the reverse.
Uh-oh. A reverse dunk off the bounce to himself. Hell yes. And that's for all the haters who said that Steph can't get up and get down. I really don't care about the final score. I really don't care who won or who lost. I really don't give a damn about the game MVP. What I cared about was whether or not I was entertained, and I was. So here's something I thought that I would never say about an all-star game. Hell yes. Hell yes. That was good. Seriously, it was really freaking good. I loved it. I loved it. Almost nothing memorable about the weekend other than the game, but the game was that good. So credit where credit's due. I loved it. Mike Krzyzewski is my guest. Mike, it is so good to have you back. How are you?
Yeah, good, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Nice to have you on. Good to visit with you, as always. So you beat NC State by 16 on Saturday in a game, Mike, where you had multiple players who were tired. Following that Louisville game, you had guys who were physically ill throughout the week. Maybe you've had better games over the course of the year, but how proud were you of the physical and mental toughness your guys showed on Saturday night?
Yeah, I'm really proud of this team because, you know, as talented as these freshmen are, they're still freshmen. You know, they're 19 years old, and you know, we've played as tough a schedule as there is in the country, and especially during this time period where you go from playing a Saturday ago at Virginia to then Louisville and then NC State, and then we have Carolina on Wednesday, Syracuse away, then Virginia Tech on a Tuesday. A big thing, Jim, is not just who you play, but how you play when do you play the game? So in our league, we play a lot of Saturday, Monday, or Tuesday. So since the start of the conference, the start of the new year, yesterday was the first Sunday that our kids have had a day off. And basically the first day off they've had, because when you have these late games, you get back 2-3 in the morning, and that next day is an off day, but it's not an off day. They have to go to school. Not have to. They're going to school, and they're recovering. So you get worn out, and guys stepped up for us. Our bench stepped up for us in this game, the two big guys, Bolden and Delorier, and Jack White, and we're going to need that as we move along.
Duke head coach Mike Krzyzewski joining us, and of course RJ Barrett did too. 23 points, right. 11 rebounds, Mike, 10 assists. That was the program's first triple-double in more than a decade, and he had no turnovers in that game. What did you make of how he showed up?
Well, he was, you know, he's had a remarkable year. You know, he's a great college player. He's going to, I think, be an outstanding pro player. But the one of the great things, Jim, that you would love about him for this game, he was a kid that on Wednesday and Thursday was throwing up and sick, and we weren't sure he was going to even show up for practice on Friday. He did do a little bit on Friday, and then all of a sudden on Saturday he has a performance like that. So, you know, the toughness and the, you know, just the grit, you know, to be able to play like that after overcoming sickness is, makes it even more more impressive.
You know, you're right. You're right, Mike. I do love that. I couldn't be more impressed with his grit and the way he showed up, especially given the week he had. This podcast is brought to you by my pals at O'Reilly's. When it gets cold out there, your vehicle needs some extra attention. O'Reilly Auto Parts has everything you need to keep your vehicle toasty warm. From choosing the right antifreeze for your engine to replacing your windshield wiper blades, O'Reilly will help get your car or truck in fighting shape for the cold weather ahead. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Now, you've been asked about Zion in so many different ways. Let me instead ask you this. What do you remember about the first time you saw him?
Just to, you know, what a gifted athlete he was, and so good with his teammates. You know, he's a, I watched him in AAU, and, really, he's a much better player than I even thought he was going to be, because I didn't realize all of his lateral quickness and just how much of a basketball player he was, and until I found out he was a point guard up until eighth grade. And but when I first, you know, look, he's such a good athlete, and you know, that top percentile of athleticism. But he, having him here, I found out that he's even more of an athlete and a great worker. He's smart. You love being with him every day. He's a great teammate. He has all the things that you would want a role player to have, you know, or a guy that's one of the starters and not a guy who's just a star. He's really kind of one of a kind.
You know, Mike, because you've had so much success in the NBA, you've not only been around, but you've coached some of the best to ever play the game, certainly some generational talents. And everybody wants to say, well, we know he projects, but how does he project? I guess what I'm getting at, is there any NBA player that you've ever coached that reminds you of Zion, or has he broken the mold altogether, potentially?
No, he's different. And that doesn't mean he's better than everybody or whatever. That's not what I'm saying. But he's different because he weighs, you know, 270 pounds, anywhere from 265 to 275. And what he can do laterally and with the ball and then up and down, you know, the vertical, it's just incredibly unique. And I think he'll translate at an unbelievable level in the NBA because he's got guard skills, so he can go by you. And with the way the game is called and the defensive 3 seconds and all that, there's more space. There's more space, and he's going to be terrific. He's not going to be good. He's going to be terrific.
We're talking to Duke head coach Mike Krzyzewski for a few more moments. You know, Mike, one of the things that you talked about before the season was you weren't looking for guys to buy in, but rather you were looking for guys to believe. Why is that an important distinction for you?
Well, I think if you buy in, you never really own. You know, you're doing it because you're buying in. You know, but when you believe, it becomes yours. And if it becomes yours, you will go to a higher level of everything to make sure that it turns out well. And, you know, my kids, they're really good listeners. They are really good listeners, but they also are great believers. And not just in us, they believe in each other. And that's even, that's really, really good.
You know, Mike, I'm looking at this from the outside. You just recently celebrated a birthday. And from the outside, it seems like you're somehow getting younger. Now, people may think that this is just a team loaded with amazing talent and that the job is easy. Yes and no. It's an amazingly talented team. The job is not easy. It's still a grind. It's always going to be a grind. I think that everybody looks at you like you've discovered the magic potion or secret. What is it, Mike, that gets you up and gets you motivated every single morning still yet?
Well, I'm in the best health I've been in a number of years because I've had my hips replaced for now almost two decades, and I have both my knees replaced over the last 3.5 years, and I've recovered great. So I'm not fighting any pain or lack of movement or whatever, so I'm fresher. I mean, I feel better than I have in 10 years. And I hope there's no more body parts I have to replace. But it's all turned out great, and I get the best rehab. And then, you know, every coach at every sport, it's a grind. Yes, but it's a grind that you wanted to do for your whole life. And so the other aspect of it is I'm doing what I wanted to do since I was 16. And that's the coach. And I would have never dreamed that I'd be able to have coached at this level, the U.S. team, the national championship teams, and to have an opportunity to coach this team. And so I just try to take each team each year one at a time and enjoy it and try to get into their moment. And if you would be around our guys, this group, they are really a neat group to be around. They're very, very upbeat, personal. You know, they don't have down days, and that doesn't mean there are times we don't play as well, but they're just really good people and their families are good. So, that's a good thing. I mean, it's a great thing.
It really helps be around people you like being around. And then final thought, you know, you're doing what you've always wanted to do, so that's a great thing, but you can't do what you've always wanted to do the same way. Obviously, you're going to change, you're going to evolve. Jim Boeheim said it best. Jim Boeheim said that for a long time, in his words, Mike, this is Jim talking about himself, was a coaching dictator. There was very little give and take with my players. End of quote. So how much have you changed and evolved as a coach over the years?
Yeah, a lot. And, you know, a lot. That doesn't mean you change your core values. Or obviously you learn more. I learned so much about the game being the U.S. coach from the guys I had the honor to coach and the international community coaching against them. But, I think you can change in some ways offensively and defensively and whatever. But the main thing is who are the people you are leading right now? What is their environment? What is their culture? And can you figure out how to teach your values and what you're doing in basketball wise in a way that will be appreciated and accepted by the group that you have? And I've changed a lot in that regard. I mean, I have four guys on my staff, Shire, Nate James, Chris Carrawell, and Nolan Smith. And every once in a while I said, isn't that the way I used to do it with you? And they all laugh, you know, like, yeah, right, coach. And I said, well, just so you know, the guys before you were coached differently too. So don't think that these guys are getting off easier. But a lot is how they can accept the message, Jim. You know, like, the yelling and screaming and that, it's not like I never do that, but I hardly do it because they don't get all that. One, you have to teach them how to communicate, you know, because they don't talk as much.
Right.
Yeah, they don't. And, but this group has. That's what makes them better, but you adapt in that way.
He is the head basketball coach at Duke. More wins in Division I history than anybody else. The 5 national championships, the 6 gold medals, a big game coming up Wednesday against North Carolina, and a practice which starts shortly, so I better cut you loose. Mike, so good to have you back on. I always appreciate
all right.
The
conversation.
Good
being on with you, Jim. You do such a terrific job. It's so easy to... It's good to talk to you.
You too, Mike.
It's not an interview. It's a good conversation, man.
Hey, now, are you going to hit the gym later on today? Don't you even think about going in there without Aftershocks. Best sounding, most innovative headphones I have ever owned. Aftershocks features patented bone conduction technology. The headphones do not go inside your ear like earbuds that hurt or fall out. Aftershocks rest gently just outside. Yeah, I said it. Outside your ear and produce sound by sending mini vibrations through your cheekbone to your inner ear, bypassing your eardrum. Aftershocks are also perfect if you're out running or biking since you need to hear. It's a huge safety factor because they don't go right in your ears. Aftershocks are super comfortable. They're flexible. They're awesome sounding and they're lightweight. I am amazed by these headphones and the technology. In fact, I am never going back to regular headphones ever again. Aftershock's wireless open-ear headphones are the coolest products ever. Order an Aftershock's tech bundle right now and get $50 off. Just hit roam.aftershocks.com and use code ROAM at checkout. That's the word after and then SHOKZ.com. Roam.aftershocks.com. All right, so and then you've got Antonio Brown. You see, if there's a story that is more tired than Bryce Harper's free agency, it's Antonio Brown's non-free agency. And yet, he was at it again over the weekend. This time, Antonio Brown was holding a Twitter Q&A to address his situation. And by address his situation, I mean dump even more gasoline on that fire. He started off by announcing that he would be answering 10 questions via Twitter. So let me give you some highlights. There was this question, quote, "What would you tell people that say you only want a new team to get a new contract?" AB's answer, quote, "Not for the money. It's for the love of the sport, the commitment to win relentlessly, consistently, passionately. Plus, I made $70 million. It's public record. Not to be cocky, just truth. Time to play for my own team, AB84, the family." I guess, in other words, scoreboard, look up at it. Oh, and again, anytime somebody says that it's not about the money, it's about one thing, the money. And then there's the one where he was asked about the fact that he did not play in the final game of the season against the Bengals. His answer to that was, quote, "After the coach tell the team I quit while nursing some bumps, then invite me to watch the show with same guys thinking I quit. I cannot stand with that. I'm the bad guy, though. We miss postseason. Think about it." End quote. Yeah, so I guess he's not looking to smooth things over with Mike Tomlin just yet. Or at all. Because that sure seemed like an effort to fire back at Mike Tomlin for making him the fall guy for what happened at the end of the season. And it sure seems like he's pretty determined to keep opening up that wound as many times as he possibly can. Also, is he saying that the coach told the team I quit when I didn't quit, so then I really did quit? I mean, I'm not really sure that I follow that. I'm not sure. I mean, there might be some logic in that, but I'm not really tracking with it. See, if AB's concern is that an incident like that hurt his reputation, then AB continuing to bring it up is not helping his reputation. There are other ways to deal with this than a Twitter Q&A. That's not the best way. But truthfully, the first question and answer were the best. The question read, quote, "What caused the conflict between you and Ben Roethlisberger?" That's a really good question. AB's answer, and I quote, "No conflict, just a matter of respect. Mutual respect. He has an owner mentality. Like he can call out anybody, including coaches. Players know, but they can't say anything about it. Otherwise, they meal ticket gone. It's a dirty game within a game. Hashtag truth." Damn. Now that's coming out of the gate with some fire. And it started off so well, too. You read that first few, the first few words, quote, "No conflict, just a matter of respect, mutual respect." You see that and you think, all right, maybe it's not that bad. Maybe they can work it out. And then the dramatic plot twist, quote, "He has an owner mentality, like he can call out anybody, including coaches." Hello? Now we're getting to the good stuff. Players know, but they can't say anything about it otherwise. They meal ticket gone. It's a dirty game within a game. Hashtag truth. Yeah, so I guess in retrospect, I guess there is conflict. I guess there is no mutual respect. Hey, listen, AB's right about that. Ben does have a history of criticizing and calling out teammates and coaches. It's kind of an open secret, right? And I bet that would get old if you felt like he can take shots at you, but you can never fire back. And you feel like your reputation has been under attack from everybody, including the quarterback, who can take shots at you, but you can't fire back. I bet that would get old. Let me just say this before I go to break. Antonio Brown thinking that this is going to help his rep is wrong, because it didn't. It didn't. Hell, he didn't even make it through 10 questions, the 10 questions he promised before he pulled the ripcord. He only made it through 6, which was still pretty much 6 too many. My man, I can't imagine other teams around the NFL are fired up about the possibility of bringing in a guy who has continued to air the locker room's dirty laundry in every possible public forum. We are a MySpace posting away from AB hitting for the cycle when it comes to finding new and different ways to air grievances. AB's locker room rep used to be very different than this. The guy used to host a segment for the team's website where he would interview his teammates, and it was awesome.
What it is? Today is catchphrase. Obviously, you guys know I have a couple catchphrases of my own. Business is booming, chest up, eyes up, prayed up. So let's go around and see a couple of my teammates to see some of those guys' catchphrases. I'm here with Jordan Berry.
How you going, guys?
Jordan, can you give us your catchphrases?
Oh, you got the obvious one, put the shrimp on the barbie, mate.
Right here with Mike Mitch. Money Mitch on what it is. Mitch, what's some of your catchphrases? I know you got the Lurk Gang.
We got the Lurk Gang. We got the 5 or 50. We got the I Can. We got the Wait Right There.
Right here with Big Play Will Gay. I know you got the William Wednesday. That's a big catchphrase. Yeah! I also know you Big Play Will Gay. That's the hashtag. Can you let them know what some of your other catchphrases?
Well, a lot of people, you know, when they talk, you know, you get to a point, you be like, say no more. I just look at you and be like, say less.
Say less. Right here on what it is. Big Play Will Gay. Say less.
I mean, man, that was fun. It just seems like a long, long time ago. From the outside, the guy hosting What It Is and putting up 100 receptions per year is exactly what every team would want. You want that guy. But the guy doing Twitter Q&As and putting up 100 receptions a year, you're not as much. And again, maybe that's the thinking here. Maybe AB is crazy like a fox. Maybe he's trying to poison his rep to the point that the Steelers can't trade him and they have to release him. That conspiracy theory is floating around. Man, if so, that'd be like one of the most aggressive moves ever. That's not just setting every bridge in Pittsburgh on fire. That's setting yourself on fire also. Kind of hard to think that a lot of teams are going to look at that and say, yeah, that's cool. That's pretty smart. That worked. Let's bring the guy who just lit his locker room and himself on fire into our locker room. I mean, if that's an actual thing, if that's a strategy, that is the boldest of the bold strategies. Good luck with that paying off. My man, I'm going to ask you to do the hardest thing in the world, at least for you. Put your phone down. Just do it. Because every time you pick that thing up, you do more damage to what was once an amazing rep. Just take a break. Just take a break. At least put it in airplane mode. Because you're not helping them at this point. You're hurting them. And you shouldn't be on your blower, man. Antonio, you know I've got your back. I've always had your back. This has always been a huge AB house. I want to have your back, but you're making it damn near impossible for me to do so. Man, just put the phone down. AJ Hinch is my guest. AJ, so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great. It is it's like a spring training ritual. I know camp opens when you call me and ask me to come on the show. So I'm ready for both. I'm ready for your show. I'm ready for camp. I got the boys ready.
My man, great to hear it. And you know how baseball is. It's a regimented game, a ritualistic game. So you're right. This is a spring training ritual. You're entering your fifth season with the club. So coming in, how does this one compare to the ones that you've had before it this season? I mean, coming in.
It's good. You know, we kind of have a really good vibe about us. We have a good team. We're pretty bullish about it. You know, we've got to go out and prove it and chase down the Red Sox, who are the reigning champs. And the American League's tough with some of the teams, but I stood in front of our group today, and I look out, and there's Verlander, and there's Cole, and there's Altuve, and Correa, and Bregman, and Springer, and I start to, like, well, my job doesn't suck. I got a pretty good group, and they're ready to go, and it's funny. When you taste winning like we did in 17, and then we were 7 wins shy of going back-to-back, got to the ALCS, there's a little hunger in the room, which I like, and you know, we'll begin today with our full squad we did, and then the games start this weekend, and about a month from now we'll play for real.
You know, I bet it's not a coincidence that when you answer that question, you started with Verlander, which I want to get to in a minute, but Bregman, Alex Bregman, told the New York Post that the vibe in camp feels different. Quote, he said, there's a mindset in here like we got punched in the mouth last year, and everyone is more motivated than I've ever seen. There is just a different feeling in here than there was last year. It feels very similar to a team that has not won before. I'm telling you right now, these guys are motivated, and they are pissed off, end quote. Is that one guy talking, or is that one guy speaking for a lot of other guys?
I think he's speaking for a lot of guys. I mean, look, one of the best parts of our team is I don't have to spend a lot of time on motivation. I mean, I think at this level will motivate you. The competition does. You know, if you're around on Verlander or Cole start day, it's serious. It's legit. You have players in the lineup that post every single day. We have guys that play hurt. Like there's a brotherhood here that's real. And I know 30 managers probably would brag about their team on a day like today when you're opening up camp, but that's a great example of guys that get it and why Bregman's becoming a household name, you know, through his performance. He's clutch. He'll put it out there. He doesn't back down, and then he goes out and prepares to do it. And that's – I like guys that say it. I like guys that back it up even better, and we got a combination of that group.
AJ Hinch joining us once again. You know, you and I have talked about Bregman so much in years past. I wonder, when you got a guy who runs hot like that, and I know it's in a good way, but man, he is fierce, and it's every single day, right? I mean, I'm not there, but it seems to me every single day, and if he didn't handle it a certain way, it would also seem to me that it might wear guys out, but that's not the case with him. How would you describe his personality and the impact he has on everybody around him?
Yeah, no, he's a gamer, and you can't throw that around for everybody. You know, I know at this level, I respect everybody in the game and what they do to get here and what they do to stay here. But he is quickly becoming a great example for how to prepare and the mindset that you need to come and compete every day. In 162 games and, you know, 185 days is a really long season. It's not like other sports. We don't get a lot of downtime where we're not playing games. And even the All-Star break, like I watched the NBA have 7 or 10 days off. I mean, ours is 3 days, and then we get back and play again. And it's a different sport, and you need the marathon runner that knows how to sprint to finish and knows how to sprint at certain times of the year. And I think where players sometimes get you know, they get out there a little bit, or they, you know, they can pop off a little bit, or they get excitable. When you back it up and prove that you're willing to put it out there and go do the work, then you gain a little bit of respect. And then when you do play at the level that some of these guys play at, and you have extreme success, and you're still hungry, that starts to garner some respect too. And you know, Bregman will be one of the more vocal guys on our team, and even in our sport. I think our sport needs that. I think it's good for everybody, as long as you stay humble enough to stay grounded and understand that this is a league full of really good players, that the fans will appreciate him.
H.A. Hinch joins us, Astros manager, spring training opener Saturday. So let's go back to Verlander for a minute. Verlander, Cole, Rogers, they had their first live BP sessions yesterday, and Verlander was talking about it being, quote, a building block, and the fact that it's crucial to pay attention to the foundation or everything crumbles. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's done everything there is to do in this game, coming off a season where he pitched at a really elite level once again, and this is a guy talking about building blocks and foundations. What's that tell you about that guy?
Man, it tells me he's one of the best of a generation. I mean, I think this guy, I didn't know him that well when we traded for him back in 17. I learned about how influential he can be through the playoffs and World Series, and then last year, We had him year to year, and I mean, we can have a whole show on whether or not he should have won the Cy Young with the volume that he put up compared to, you know, what Snell did, and just that he's just elite. I mean, we walk in day one, and he's ready to go and in top shape. He does prepare himself for the rigors. You know, you might throw 20, 30 pitch bullpen. He throws a 50 or 60 pitch bullpen, and he does it intently with a purpose. I love the way he goes about it. And, you know, yes, he's opinionated, and yes, he's, you know, he's got a high profile. He's got a big personality in the room, but, you know, it's a lot about baseball and a lot about winning and the opportunity that's ahead. And people will question him. You know, his birthday's in a couple days, and I'll probably try to embarrass him. And the fact that he's turning 36, and he'll look you dead in the eye and say, "That's okay. I'm gonna pitch till I'm 45."
Yeah, right.
And he just throws it out there. That's another 9 years. So I wouldn't deny him anything that's possible. He's gonna continue to evolve and be elite. And if he wants to pitch till 45, I bet he has a job.
AJ Hinch, my guest, he will evolve. You know, he changes, the game changes. Which brings me to this point that Gerrit Cole made the other day. He said he'd be really irritated if you went with an opener strategy instead of just giving the starters the ball and letting them go. I know you're chuckling, but when you got a guy like Cole and Verlander, you don't need to think about using an opener. But as a former catcher, what do you make of that approach? Yeah. Do you appreciate trying to find every possible way to win, or does that feel kind of weird to you?
Well, both. I mean, I think you have to play and use your team, you know, to the personnel. Like, if you give me a lot of guys that can't play every day and I've got to platoon them, then I believe in platoons. If you give me a couple horses that are going to throw 200, 220 innings, then I believe in the starting pitcher. If you have to manage your team by kind of where the strengths are and where they're not. I mean, I'm not a dummy. I'm not going to start an opener with Justin Verlander or with Gerrit Cole. And last year we had five starters for the first, you know, 3 or 4 months of the season, and they, you know, I think 3 or 4 of them went to the All-Star game. So when people were asking me last year about this new thing, the opener, I said, no, for their team, it's great. For my team, it would suck because some of my best pitchers are my starters. So I think, you know, Garrett's right in the sense that he's in, you know, top of the rotation type. JB, you know, certainly is more old school when it comes to what he thinks his responsibility is. And then you piece it together, like, by the personnel that you have. In a perfect world, I love the sport. When you look in the newspaper or on the and now it's at the app or whatever you're going to look at, and you see, you know, Verlander versus Kluber. There's something about that matchup. I mean, we talk about it in different sports like that as well. When it's high end talent against high end talent, you feel really good about it. If you don't have that high end talent, you got to try to find a competitive advantage. Then tip of the cap and go with it. But I prefer the big boys match up against each other and that starter go deeper into the games and let me play, you know, a little bit of matchups late in the game and then, you know, have a beer afterwards celebrating a win.
I like that. AJ Hinch, my guest. Really quickly, last month, AJ, you toured Camp Hope in Houston. For those who do not know, what is Camp Hope and what was that visit like for you?
Yeah, you know, I've gotten involved in Houston in a couple different things, and a buddy of mine, Brian Wing, who's a real close friend of mine in the Woodlands, took me to a place called Camp Hope that is essentially a rehab facility for combat soldiers that come back from war with PTSD. And what I learned about it is that, you know, PTSD is often, shown as being something where it's a big violent, disease that soldiers come back and they're just not ready for society and they go on these tirades throughout the communities. And the reality is it's very dangerous for them to do harm upon themselves when they come out of combat. They put them on a plane, they come home and they're trying to reintegrate themselves into society. It's just different. Like we live in such a perfect world compared to what the war places are. And there's a facility in Houston that's local that we're trying to bring awareness to, that if you know somebody, you know, a returning veteran or someone, they have from ages, I mean, in their 20s all the way to somebody in their 70s, a facility to treat them for PTSD. I think it's 6 or 7 months where they can be seen and overseen and gently work themselves back into everyday society. And it's dangerous when we're losing soldiers at the rate in which we lose them, not only in war, but when they come back to the U.S. soil. People need to know there's a facility for help whenever the soldiers need it.
And that facility in Houston is called Camp Hope. AJ Hinch is the manager of the Astros, and they're getting ready for their spring training opener on Saturday. AJ, as you point out, this has become a ritual. I always look forward to it, and it always lives up to it. That was great. I really appreciate you. That was a lot of fun. Great to have you back on, and I hope we can do it again soon.
Anytime. Love coming on your show.
Can you believe it? Postage rates have gone up again. Thankfully, Stamps.com can ease the pain with big discounts off post office retail rates. You see, with Stamps.com, you can save 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. That kind of savings is going to really add up, especially if you have a small business. Plus, Stamps.com is completely online, which saves you so much time. No more inconvenient trips to the post office. And Stamps.com saves you money. They give you postage discounts that you cannot get at the post office, including 5 cents off every first-class stamp. Anything that you can do at the post office, you can do right now from your desk for even less. This is why I use Stamps.com. I use it for the convenience. I use it because it saves me money. I use it because I can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, and any class of mail with my own computer and printer. And right now, you can get a special offer, which includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. See for yourself why over 700,000 small businesses use Stamps.com. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Rome. That's Stamps.com. Enter Rome. So the tour needed to march guys off both sides of the course from sunup to sundown and didn't stop until J.B. Holmes ran down Justin Thomas late Sunday afternoon to win his fifth career tournament. Couple of Kentucky guys going toe-to-toe down the stretch. Clutch up and downs for J.B. Must make birds for J.T. But in the end, it was the 36-year-old who got over and got the fifth win of his career. The dude who used to treat a 10-year-old Justin Thomas like a little brother on the way up treated the 25-year-old major champ like a little brother when he ran him down on Sunday. And to his credit, JT was an absolute man after shooting 75 and losing by a stroke to a guy who used to let him under the ropes as a kid. He said, quote, "I mean, that stuff I'll never forget. I just never thought, you know, 15 years later, he would beat my ass at Riviera. That was a bummer." End quote. That's a great quote. There were brutal conditions. Gale force wind warnings, temps barely into the 50s, more rain. And that's not brutal for SoCal when dudes are throwing on UGG boots and a parka the moment the mercury drops below 72. That's not what I'm talking about. I mean, that was just straight up brutal. Straight up brutal conditions. But nothing was more brutal than that scene on Saturday. Well, scratch that. Nothing was more brutal than the tweet on Saturday when one dude embarrassed himself again. And I am not talking about Matt Kuchar, who finally issued an apology. One that was clearly written by somebody else before doing what he should have done so much sooner. Taking care of his caddy, who was on his bag for his first win in nearly a half a decade. Sort of. Like too little too late, which I'll get to later on. But no, I'm not talking about that right now. I'm talking about my EP, Adam Hawk, who once again went sparrow at the worst possible time on the worst possible stage. Hawk hit Twitter with maybe the cringiest photo I've ever seen. If you're not watching on CBS Sports Network, close your eyes. I will describe it for you. Imagine this. An absurd dude with a ridiculous pattern shirt, stupid shades, Panama Jack hat, porn stash. It's almost like Hawk opened up his closet on Saturday morning and said, I want to look like the dead guy in Weekend at Bernie's, and then just nailed it. A grown man with a cat tattoo tracked down his idol on the golf course, the actual cat, and he waited. Staked out his real estate, and he waited, for the actual cat. And then the cat walked by. And then Hawk, with the tatted cat, waiting for the actual cat, reached out for a high five. And then Eldrick hit him with the greatest Heisman since Rory McIlroy did the exact same thing to Hawk last year. I mean, the tweet is essentially a fireable offense. And believe me, I've taken it up with HR. Can I fire a guy for that? Hey, can you look at this link? Can I fire a guy for this? Yeah, I know last year you wouldn't let me, but now it's twice. Can I do it this year? You see, the guy who represents me and this radio program is out there looking like a complete idiot and then posting it on social where the clones were and still are absolutely wearing this guy out. Stephen PHX says, quote, "You look like a fake passport dealer." Chris, no longer in St. Pete, said, quote, "That stash to hat ratio is creepy AF." Stephen Crowtown tweets, quote, "Control yourself, dude." Even Cruz Pedregon hopped into the mentions with some jungle synergy, quote, "Insert Luke Gallows nerd blast." But by the way, the other good brother and I were texting it up over the weekend.
Brother.
God, the brothers were so good. Too sweet. God, love those guys. I'll have to reset that for you, too. Anyway, everything about that tweet, everything about Hawk's tweet, it's just, it's so stupid. Right down to the fact that he replied to his tweet from last year where he did the same damn thing and nearly got fired for it then. Wouldn't you think that a dude with a newborn at home would have better things to do than throw on some black skinny jeans and spend the day at Riv being a fanboy and then documenting it for everybody to see on social? You would think the same dude would have enough sense not to post photos of himself acting like a complete tool, you know, on social where his boss might see it. You'd think a lot of things. But that's not what Hawk does. So, Riv ate a lot of dudes up this weekend. Jordan Spieth shot 81, made a snowman on a 302-yard par 4. Tiger was 5 under on 4 holes on Saturday, then made 5 straight 5s on Sunday. But nobody wore an L this weekend like Hawk. And the only thing surprising about that was that it was not surprising at all. At all. Apparently, this guy will go on record and say he's a friend of yours. Apparently, this guy has some sense of what went down this weekend. Let's go to Long Beach. Ryan in Long Beach. Ryan, what's going on? How are you?
Romy, first time, long time. I'm doing okay after Saturday. I'm not doing great.
All right, so what happened on Saturday? Do you know this guy?
Unfortunately, I do. It's worse than I thought. I was with Hawk. We go to Riv. He's got bad info on everything. He thinks Tiger's on 12. He's actually on 4. Then I look at Hawk's outfit. He looks like a cheap cigar smuggler. We get on the course. It's 7:40. Hawk's already ordering IPAs and Bloody Marys. Clearly, he just had his second kid. And at one point, we order a Bloody Mary. He asked the whole bar staff and the whole line ordering drinks, "Does anyone have aspirin?"
Then, aspirin.
Okay, right. So fast forward maybe half an hour. Keith Mitchell hits a shot off the fairway. Ball's on the path. We walk by it. We stand and wait for Keith to hit it. The volunteer says, "Hey, guys, once he hits it, you know, give him a second. Let him get back on the fairway." We say, "No problem." As soon as the volunteer leaves, Hawk's like, "Oh, I'm going to be all over him as soon as he hits the ball." Keith Mitchell comes up, hits the ball, great shot, gets out of trouble. Hawk's in his ear, "Nice shot, Keith! Nice shot, bro!" So, it was disgusting, embarrassing, not what I thought it would be.
No, dude, I see it working. That sounds horrible. It's so much worse than I thought, Ryan. Listen, thanks for that. Sorry about it all. Go ahead, Hawk. Put on your headphones. So that's a guy. You got to explain who this guy is before you explain yourself. That sounds to me like a guy. First of all, unlike you, that sounded like a really normal guy and a smart guy. But that sounds to me like a guy who thought to himself, "Damn, like, I'm going to go to Riv with Adam Hawk, and this is going to be a good day." That guy sounded despondent, man. He didn't even sound mad. He just sounded depressed. Like, that's not what I thought that was going to be. What an embarrassment.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. So that's Ryan. I play golf with him. He's in the foursome. He's a friend of a friend, and now one of my good
not
friends.
Not anymore. He's not.
Maybe he's a little too embarrassed anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was
he
a friend.
Didn't
of
sound
a
like a good friend.
Right. So friend of a friend that's now a good friend. We went to the tournament together. I went with the guys that I golf with. They were first timers, except one of them had been with me before. They were mortified of my appearance, my act, but I'm out there to have a good time. I'm shameless. I thought that Tiger would know who I was because since the last time I saw him, I've kind of gained some status. The last time I saw him was 2010.
Will you back the hell up for a minute? Did you just say I thought that Tiger would know who I was?
This is a massive show. You're a massive host. I produced the show. The last time I saw
him. You're a massive tool, Hawk. Did you just say, never mind. Do you do things like this, obviously, to get people to look at you? Don't you want friends? None of those guys, and by the way, act like you've been there before because you have last year.
Same result as last year as well. So, yes, I want one person to look at me. I wanted Tiger to look at me.
Did you broadcast with me from Torrey? No, you had a kid. You were not at Torrey with me. So you don't really know how to act. And by the way, how did you get this hall pass? Didn't you just have a kid?
Yeah, it just the stars aligned. My wife was super cool about it. She knew that, you know, I fanboy for Tiger and I had bought these tickets a long time ago. Actually, I bought the tickets and then I was hooked up afterwards. And so then I ended up.
Dude, I know she doesn't dress you. What does she think when you say, hey, hon, how do I look before you leave?
She's not a fan, honestly, of the wardrobe. She thinks that I look like a cartoon character.
Why are you so surprised, bro?
Because I honestly think that I have steez and style, and everyone, like, when I posted that photo, I expected, like, the unanimous reaction to be like, dude, that's a dope shirt, man. You got a bunch of tigers on your shirt. That's a great hat. Nice mustache. But everyone just kills me for it.
Did you just say that when you posted that, you expected everybody to say, damn, you're a dope?
Yeah, and then it went sideways on me.
And everybody did. So why are you disappointed?
Well, you know, I checked the comments, and then everyone was against me. But, you know, I'm used to it now. I wanted one person to look at me. The answer is yes. And that person was Tiger. I wanted him to dap me up. I was left hanging last year by Rory. Now Tiger's done it to me. I don't know where to go from here.
You know they're at work, right, Hawk?
Yeah, but, you know, Jim, if I'm being honest here, I threw out my mitt for Phil Mickelson, and he dapped me up like 10 times that day. I mean, I know that's Lefty's act to be the I'm the man of the people
to be
guy.
To be fake?
I mean, he wore out my hand giving me high fives.
Come on. When?
The whole back nine. Phil was all over me.
Saturday.
Yeah, he was playing with Xander and Jordan. Got nothing from
Jordan. You're like, Phil, dude, bro, get off me. You're crushing me. I mean, get off me. I'm trying to experience this golf tournament. Stop dapping me up.
Yeah, Phil, stop with the thumbs up and high-five me, okay? My hand hurts. And I'm trying to hold my IPA here. But yeah, it's true. Ryan's right. I did ask for aspirin at one point during
the... Why'd you do that?
I had tied it on the night before because I had that hall pass we were talking
smooth.
About.
Smooth. Smooth, Hawk. Oh, you got up there the night before.
That's right.
I see you working.
That's right. And we still made it to the track at 6 in the morning. Saw some clones there. Saw Pattisauer from Bugaha, a.k.a. Uh-huh. Brett. Uh-huh. He was there with his boy, Scotty. And even
Brett was embarrassed by you, and he's an embarrassment to this show.
Yeah, Brett didn't hang out that long. He hung out for like two holes.
Dude,
I got to get away from this guy.
Dude, he saw your act. He was there. Trust me. Just a few holes back of you. Dude, you were asking for aspirin.
Yeah, I was hurting, but I was powering through like a champ. Ran into Pat Perez, who would have been proud of me powering through. Pat Perez says, what's up to you? No big deal.
Oh, dude, you didn't talk to Pat Perez, did you?
Yeah, he was on the putting
green. Will you stop talking to athletes, Hawk? Oh, great. So Perez saw you.
Yeah.
Did you blow up any other bridge while you were there?
None whatsoever. I was honestly on good behavior. I just looked like an idiot. All of my comments to people are positive. I'm a golf fan, so I like to cheer on golfers. I zipped my lip around Matt Kuchar. I didn't say anything.
No, I thought you were there to fill his ear up, too.
I backed off from that because it's a CBS event, and I'm a CBS employee, and so I thought better of it.
That's smart, Hawk.
Thank you.
That's really smart.
I didn't say anything to Cooch.
Damn, I need some aspirin now. Hey, Alvin, you got any aspirin? Tighten me up, bro. I need some ibuprofen.
It's a great time, though.
For you, Hawk, but nobody else, man. I'm glad you had fun because nobody around you did. That was your boy, Ryan, in Long Beach, right?
Yeah.
You just said we were friends. It was not what I thought it was going to be. That was his sanitized version of, man, that guy is a dope. That sucked. But he was trying to be respectful.
Yeah. Well, watch him show up next year with me and watch him show up with a cool outfit on like me.
That guy will move to another state. That guy will find a new line of work. That guy, trust me. Hawk, you act like he's going to show up rocking a porn stash with some ridiculous skinny black jeans that look like capris and some shirt buttoned all the way up. Like, hey, yeah, Ryan, just like I thought.
With the tiger print on it. I thought it was a good look. I thought Tiger
would
be into
it. Now you're done, Hawk. I got a headache. All right, thanks for nothing. Stop embarrassing me in the show. If it's not too much to ask, stop embarrassing me in my show. I've worked really long and hard to get here. Stop tearing down what I've worked so hard to develop.
Give me back my show.
Give me back my show. Jason Lockenfora. Brother, how are you?
Oh, I'm trying to survive nobody in school today, Jim, but it's all good. It's all good.
Man, I see it working. I know exactly what you're talking about. I've got the same deal. All right, so I would say, Jason, that we're in the middle of the NFL offseason, but the truth is there doesn't really seem to be an NFL offseason. As an example, what was your reaction on Friday to the news that Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid had agreed with the league to resolve their pending grievances?
Yeah, I was, surprised. I mean, there's no template for this, right? There's no textbook for this. This is pretty unprecedented, where you have an individual in the NFL making claims like this and basically putting the league on notice, making the league play defense, coming after the NFL and forcing them to account for their actions versus what we normally see in a Deflategate, in a Bountygate, what have you, where the league and its attorneys are coming after coaches, players, owners, what have you. So I wasn't sure how it was going to end up, and you're not privy to all the evidence, and none of us are privy to even the particulars of the confidential settlement. So it's hard for me to sit down and write a column on this and formulate cogent ideas until I feel like I have a little more information at my disposal. But the reality is, whatever you think of Colin Kaepernick and whatever you think of the league, the NFL doesn't go around settling with people when it doesn't have to, and it doesn't go around paying disgruntled, I guess at this point, former players, maybe a player again, if there's nothing to this, and it doesn't invest all this money in a legal team and spend, really over a year, probably 15 months or so since he initially made his claims, investigating this and going through depositions and discovery with a payout at the other end, unless there's a reason to make a payout at the other end.
I think that's a really good answer, a really interesting answer. So what about this? If the resolution includes a confidentiality agreement, and this is what you touched on, it's really hard for you to write your column because we're not supposed to know about anything involving this. However, Jason, you're extremely well-sourced. I mean, what types of things are you hearing from sources about the resolution of that case?
A lot of people are talking, Jim, but I don't think they know. Hmm. You know what I mean? There's a very small group of people who actually were probably privy to the final negotiations of this. Some lawyers for the league and some outside counsel, and Mark Garagos and a couple of lawyers from his firm, and Colin and Colin's girlfriend, and that's it. I mean, I think it's it's kind of cute that like you could call people with different teams, and you could get a lot of people to tell you a lot of stuff off the record, but like I'm even hesitant to pass along what I hear because these people are they're all guessing, they're all guessing, and they're in my estimation extrapolating their own biases onto their their anonymous opinions of what it means or what it doesn't mean or how much it was or how much it wasn't. I'm not comfortable going down that road based on what I've heard to this point, because I haven't heard anything from anybody who I think has more than a second or third hand at best account, So I don't know, man. I've covered the league for a long time. Never seen a situation like this. Never seen anything unfold quite this way. Never seen a player have to deal with what Colin Kaepernick has, in my estimation, overtly had to deal with for this long. So I don't know where it's going. I can't tell you that I know exactly what the settlement means, other than, again, the NFL and its very high-priced legal team thought that we need to throw X amount of dollars at this to try to make it go away. My assumption is X is a pretty big sum of money, but I couldn't tell you with any certainty, nor could most people on the planet, whether it's seven figures or eight figures or all the degrees in between.
We are talking to Jason Lockenfora. All right, so I move you on to something else. You've got a piece up on CBSSports.com right now about free agency and players who are likely to be tagged. You've got Le'Veon Bell down as a virtual certainty that he'll get tagged. If so, how do you think he and the NFLPA will respond?
to be interesting, to say the least. The Steelers have been talking to the NFL's management council on and off about this situation since August and September. And okay, if he really is going to hold out for this long, then what do, you know, per your interpretation of the CBA, what are our options? And if he holds out this long, what are our options? If he holds out, you know, I should say hold out. If he refuses, because it's not a holdout. If he refuses to sign the contract for this long, then what do you think our options are? And I've heard consistently since September that the transition tag was very likely going to be a mechanism that they were going to employ here. And I've heard nothing to the contrary. In fact, I've just heard more and more, and especially leading up to the Super Bowl when I first reported that their plan right now is to absolutely transition him. That hasn't changed. Now, is there going to be a fight? Sure. You know, the NFLPA is going to have their interpretation of it. Nothing will get started until they actually formulate that paperwork. And then once they actually send notifications that we're putting the transition tag on him, then I suspect there'll be some hearings. And there'll maybe have to be an arbitration decision. But the Steelers and the NFL feel like they can put the transition tag on him, that figure should come out to essentially almost exactly what he was set to earn last year on the franchise tag. And then if he signs that thing, he could be traded. And I think that's how it ultimately plays out. And if he really wants out of Pittsburgh and he finally wants to make some money, then just do what you have to do to facilitate a trade. You know, that other team, that other team's gonna have to pay you way more than the transition tag. You know, if you want to then hold out on them, you could do that. But I never understood why they had subterfuge at the trade deadline last year that hurt his trade value when you're only gonna get paid somewhere else. And I don't know how much he would protest here. Let them get the draft pick and then go, you know what I mean? The team that trades for you, maybe they'll give you 14, 15 a year, whatever you want. But it's probably going to get ugly.
Yeah, I think. Tell me I'm wrong. Did I just hear Copper in the background? And how is he?
He's good, thanks. I am far away from him, but he's quite vocal. So, yeah, I literally just went into the upstairs bathroom and closed the door because I was like, maybe they won't be able to pick up his bark. But, yeah, it's one of those days.
Good,
but, yeah,
dude.
That's Copper. He says,
sounds
oh,
good
he's
though,
doing
man.
Well. Thank you. Oh, I guess he got up the steps. Now he's a little closer to me.
Good. He knows. He knows we're talking about him. He's smart like that.
Yeah.
Now, before you go, you know, I ran into Nick Foles' agent, Justin Schulman, the other night. He was funny. He looked at me and he goes, hey, so what do you think is going to happen with Nick? I said, I don't know. You represent him. What do you think is going to happen with Nick? You tell me, Jason, what's the market look like for Nick Foles? What's the next step for him and the Eagles?
There's not much of a market for him. I mean, Jacksonville and – I mean, Washington, maybe, I guess you could maybe say that. I mean, Miami, I don't think Miami's looking for a 30-something win-now quarterback. I think Miami is transitioning for the long term. I don't know that there's a whole lot out there for Nick Foles. He'll get a nice contract somewhere, but I don't see a bidding war. And I think that the Eagles could regret putting a franchise tag on him because he will immediately sign it, as he should. And then who's really going to step up? Like, how much will Jacksonville or whomever give up to get him knowing I don't really know who I'm competing with? Like, you know, Flacco got a four. He had a fixed cost assigned to him. You already knew what he's going to cost you the next 3 years and specifically what he's going to cost you this year. With Foles, it's still going to be nebulous. You have to work out a longer-term deal with him. I don't know, Jim. I mean, I keep hearing that they're leaning towards tagging him. But a lot could change between now and, 15 days from now when those decisions have to formally be made. And, again, they could really put themselves in a bind if he signs it right away and nobody's dying to give them more than a 6 or a 7, you know, to pay this guy $25 million. Well, you could have got more for that as a comp pick if you just let him walk. I don't know. It's some interesting calculus going on there.
Jason Lockenfora joining us. All right, I've got about 60 seconds, maybe a little bit more. You're not just about football. You are a legendary Orioles fan. What do you make of the fact that both Manny Machado and Adam Jones are both still unsigned?
It's bizarre to me. I mean, we're sitting here talking about Le'Veon Bell. He might get tagged before Machado or Bryce Harper are signed. And it's like, could you imagine? I mean, I wrote about this in my column. Could you imagine if it was like a week before the start of the preseason in the NFL and like DeMarcus Lawrence and D Ford, you know what I mean? Or whoever else. And I don't think those guys are hitting the market. They're going to be tagged, but you know, whoever the top free agents are, like they don't have teams. Like I think people would be apoplectic. They'd be like, this is crazy. Where in baseball, spring training games are starting in the next week. and nobody knows. I can't say I'm totally shocked because clearly there's a recalibration going on there. I think the Scott Boris's or those guys of the world are going to have to figure out whether to get their, if they want 35 a year, to take it for 5 years, because it's probably not there for 10 anymore. I mean, that just seems to be a market correction.
I think you're right. There's something going on for sure. There is something going on. As I mentioned, a man with an amazing resume, but he said it himself. You can just go ahead and introduce me as the man who was the first guest on the CBS Sports Network simulcast. I will, but I'll do the other stuff too. GLC, I really appreciate you. Thanks for getting us in today.
Hey,
really
my
good
pleasure.
Talking to you.
Thanks for putting up with Copper.
We go to Missouri. Steve in Missouri. Good to have you on, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the vine, Rome. I wanted to call tomorrow, but my job won't allow me to because I work during the day. But I have been a Jungle Insider for 10 years, so I get to catch every show. But tomorrow will be the one-year anniversary of you having David Goggins on your podcast. And I kind of took to heart what Goggins said about, you know, the stuff that's going to help you sometimes sucks and you got to callous your mind, and kind of worked it around. And then in May of 2018, I started a weight loss journey and lost 140 pounds to date.
Dude.
By what I heard. Yeah, what Goggins said and during your interview really kind of, it took me a couple months to get around to it, but I just kind of thought, you know, what he said had weight to it, and I needed to put that towards getting in better shape. And I don't think I would have had that mindset if not hearing Goggins on your podcast. And so I appreciate you being the best interviewer in the game, and I appreciate the in-depth podcast that you put together over the last year and a half. And I just want to thank you for doing that. I want you to keep up the great work, because I know I went against the clones values by losing weight, but it's really helped me health-wise, and hopefully I can continue down the road and continue to lose weight and get healthier.
My man, Steve, that is an amazing story. That is an amazing story. Congrats. I'm so glad that you told that story to us. Make sure you rack that call, Alvin. Madison, Wisconsin. Charlie in Madison. Charlie, what's up?
Hey,
how are you?
I made it. I can't believe it.
You did. What's up, Charlie?
I've been listening to you since you were on the radio in the 90s. And, you know, you just tell it us. And by the way, I'll take that guy some weight. I can't gain weight if he killed me. but you rock. You talk about every sport. I'm a Brewer fan, obviously. And I worked at Miller Park in the private club. And it's a great experience. I went training for the world. I always gave high five to Bernie Brewer. He came up to and high five everyone. He goes over making his rounds, and I'm just very blessed to be from a culture where we love our sports. It doesn't hurt. I love baseball, and my God, this is amazing. I just got this new cable system, AT&T, and now I can finally see on TV. That's cool, because I'm trying to learn all these sports channels.
My man, you're off to a great start, Charlie. Good job. It is good to meet you. Good to hear your voice. And you found the show. Good job, Charlie. Good effort. CBS Sports Network. See? Isn't that amazing?
Good night.